This is going to be a particularly powerful episode. My name is Jason Mark Campbell, and what I've done a couple of years ago is interview Alex and Layla Hormozi, the ones behind the Gym Launch System, Acquisition.com, and the writing of multiple books such as $100 Million Offers, $100 Million Leads, and more. And in this conversation, we discussed how is it that you can go out there and have some success, whether you're going into your business by yourself or building that venture with your partner. I love them as role models on how they work together, and Alex Hormozi has taught me so many fundamentals around marketing and sales that I still apply in the businesses that I work with today. So if you're just starting off or you're just at a point of scaling, this conversation is an extremely powerful one that actually was originally hosted on a platform where I would do these interviews called Lifebook, and I asked them for the rights to publish this on the podcast because the information was so good, I wanted to share it with the world. So a big thank you to Lifebook for giving me the rights to share this, and for all of you who are listening in, pay close attention, this might be the perfect game changer just before the holiday season. One final note is the video quality might not be as high as our regular episode, but make sure that you're listening in because the content being said is incredible. Enjoy. Welcome to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast, where we explore what it really takes to sell, lead, and grow a business, and ultimately live well. In every episode, we go beyond tactics to discover how entrepreneurs and leaders across different sectors are growing with love, impact, and integrity. We are covering the 12 categories of life in Lifebook, and this month we are featuring the career category. I have an extraordinary couple that are going to be joining us today, Layla and Alex Hormozi. For those of you who don't know, they run acquisition.com as well as the Gym Launch System. And for those of you who are curious to go deep into their methods, they are writing a series of books. Alex just came out with $100 million offers. You're going to want to pick up a copy of this book. As I'm recording this, it is currently 99 cents to buy, but the price of it shouldn't be any correlation to the value you get. Both me and Alex Surdu have read this book, have transformed the way that we present our offers. It's the most impactful book I've read all year. Get the subheadline saying how to make offers so good people feel stupid saying no. So if you want to grow your business, you want to even get a promotion, you want your career to be the best that it can be, this is the kind of book you want to read. It's super fun to go through, whether it's a physical book or an audible, and you're going to get a ton of value. And behind the scenes, even in front of the scenes, as I'm following Layla on Instagram, sharing all of the business operation relationship advice as well, they are a power couple running this operation together, which is why I'm so excited to bring them on the career category. Because as we covered a few weeks ago in the relationship category, you might be looking at building your business with your partner. How does that look like? Are there potential pitfalls or incredible opportunities? That is my rant to get this started. Layla, Alex, welcome to the call.
Thanks for having me.
Jason, happy to be here.
Now, I'm going to go with a ladies first approach here, Layla, and I'm going to ask you, when it comes to career, I know you both, I think, started into the fitness journey. I've went through Alex's book, but I haven't heard about your journey, and I'd be curious to start there as to how did you get started? Was it in the fitness industry to start growing these gyms, and what brought you into this?
Yeah, definitely. My background was, you know, I think in high school, I started getting into fitness, and that's really because I'm just incredibly uncoordinated and couldn't play any sports besides running. And so I actually got into the gym when I was like 14 and started working with a trainer. And I always been kind of chubby. So I think, you know, it kind of hit home for me. I was like, I want to get in shape and, you know, lose some of this fat, et cetera, et cetera. I've been bullied when I was younger. So then that led me to thinking, okay, I want to do something in the fitness industry. I ended up losing a lot of weight myself, like 80 pounds. And I thought, you know, I want to help other people do this. And so I'm like, well, logically, I should go to school and then they'll teach me how to help other people do this, which obviously I'm sure many on here would know I didn't really get much from that. And so I actually went to school for exercise science. And when I came out of that, I was like, all right, well, what I've realized is that I learned a lot more about things I already knew, which was, you know, the body and health and all that, but I didn't learn how to build a business around this. And looking at the career options, I remember being at a career festival or whatever. And they were like, oh, PT is highest paid. And if you go into kinesiology, and I was like, PT. And so I went there and I to this woman and she said, oh yeah, like I'm killing it right now. And I was like, what do you make? And she was like, well, I make 85 grand a year. And I got out of school 6 years ago and I only work like 6 hours a day. And she said it to me like so excited and like waiting to be like, isn't this amazing? And I was like, oh my God, I just felt terrified all of a sudden. I was like, I would get out of this and 6 years later, I'm only making 85 grand. What the hell? Like it was like so scary to me that was like the ceiling. And so I was like, all right, well, crap, I guess I gotta like figure out a business of some sort. And so I was like, all right, I gotta get out of this town. I lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan, small town, not much to do there, you know, unless I want to work at the YMCA. So I was like, all right, I gotta leave. So I packed up my Prius at the time. I drove across the country. I went to California. And I was like, I'm just going to apply, work at like any gym here that'll take me so I can get some cash flow. And I got accepted at all the different gyms. I think I worked at like three of them for 2 weeks each. And then I ended up staying at 24 Hour Fitness. And when I was there, I quickly realized, I was like, oh, this is the stuff that I don't know, which is marketing and sales and getting your own clients. And so after the initial week of hiding in the bathroom and crying because I couldn't sell anyone, I bought like three books on sales and I read them. And I was like, I need to learn how to do this. And because I only had $1,000 left, I was in California. My rent was $1,200 a month. I was like, I've got to do something. I need to figure out how to sell. Nothing else is going to pay quickly. And then I did. And I ended up working my way up and becoming one of the top sales reps in that region. And then, you know, they were like, oh, we want you to do management and all this stuff. And I was like, I don't think that's my path. I think that I want to eventually open a gym. And so what I actually did was then I took my clients. I went to a smaller gym. I trained them privately there and then taught classes on the side so I could from the gym owner who ran that gym. And I said, I really want to learn marketing because now I think I understand sales. I get the operations of the gym. I understand how to do all that. And when I went there, he was a fantastic person, taught me a ton, but I didn't learn the marketing I wanted to learn. I had seen, I was like, Facebook's where it's at, Instagram's where it's at, social media's where it's at. And it hadn't like come to the gym world yet. Insert, I go on a Bumble date on a Sunday afternoon. This guy invites me to Froyo. He says, it's low commitment. I was like, okay. So we go and we meet for Froyo, low commitment date. His name ends up being Alex Ramosi. And I didn't think he liked me at first, but then we start talking about business and he seemed really excited after that. So we talked about business for about 4 hours. And I think by hour three, he was like, you know, he's like, you're really good at sales. And I was like, yeah, he's like, you should totally just work for me. I was like, is this a date or an interview? I don't know. And then I think it took about 3 weeks. You know, he said, I have this idea for this thing called Gym Launch. He's like, but I can't do it on my own because I need to know somebody else can replicate what I'm about to do. And I was like, okay, well, I'm sure you'll find someone. He was like, well, I feel like you'd be a great candidate. And he sold me on, you know, you'll make more money doing this than you would opening your own gym. He's like, oh, if you open your own gym, you've got all these costs and this overhead. You might as well just leapfrog and join me and do this thing with me. And so I think about 5 weeks in, Alex went out and launched a gym the old fashioned way, which is in Alex, in the very beginning of Gym Launch, went out and flew to these gyms and sold people into them and marketed and did it all ourselves. He came back from one and I saw that he had just absolutely crushed it at the location. And I was like, all right, well, I guess this is actually a thing that could work. And I thought to myself, like, what's the worst case scenario? I just end up back where I am with zero clients, but, you know, I can work my way back up. I'm only 23 at this point. And so that was when I actually gave away clients or got rid of them, whatever, and I stopped doing personal training and I joined Alex and then flew out to the first location and Alex trained me and side by side and I was going to watch him for the first like week and then he'll end up giving me sales and et cetera. And I remember the first day we had 8 sales appointments and his phone rang. It was like 30 minutes before the first one. He was like, I really got to take this actually. Do you think you could just take these? And I was like, what are we selling? And he was like, fitness, nutrition, accountability. You got this. You've sold fitness before. And then he left and he was on the phone for the next like 2.5 hours. And I took the sales appointments. I did go 6 for 8. And that was the beginning of, you know, our first company Gym Launch. From there, Alex and I ended up really splitting roles because, you know, I kind of came in and I was doing sales and he was kind of teaching me marketing while he was doing it. And it was like, yeah, we're both doing the same stuff. And we ended up very early on splitting it. And so I became the operator and Alex became the acquisition, you know, marketing. And so that's how we split all the companies that we've started ever since then is, you know, Alex is the idea guy. He's got the acquisition, the marketing, all that creative juice. And then I have not much creative juice. I just have operational know-how and power behind that. And so that's how we've done it since then.
That is an incredible journey. I hope that other Alex Ramosi, Alex, you went easy on him based on your comment in the chat. The other thing I was going to say, have you guys should have an endorsement from Bumble. You're like the best story I've ever heard from a Bumble here, which is fantastic. But honestly, what an amazing journey of what you guys have built together. And for those of you who aren't familiar, like Gym Launch System is like one of the best platforms for any gym owner that wants to actually launch it in a big way, in a guaranteed way too. And it's just one of these no-brainer offers for anybody in the fitness space that has been put together by the Harmozis. And they've grew it to like an incredible heights. And now acquisition.com, being the business that they run together as well, they invest in businesses and help them actually scale in the most fabulous way to get into multiple industries. So for those of you who have a product, have been wanting to grow this, you're going to want to pay attention here. And Alex, I want to give you the opportunity here. Maybe there's some rebuttal opportunities as well, but I've gotten more familiar with your story because I went through your book and I know that this launch system at first, there was a lot of getting your hands dirty. And this has also been something I've been noticing on your social media about the whole boring work angle has been a really popular thing you've been talking about. And this is probably where I want to kick it off. Like a lot of people are looking for that success. We see right now, okay, $100 million. You guys are crushing it. You're investing in a bunch of businesses. But talk about us, that boring work. Can we skip it?
I was on a podcast recently and they asked me that question. They said, hey, I know you spent 5 years building up a chain of 6 gyms on your own. And then, you were sleeping in on the floor and then learned how to sell and took 4,000 sales consults yourself. And then you went out and did 33 gym turnarounds over the next 2 years and then finally you're able to license that model out and sell it to, 4,000 locations. We're like, so for somebody who hears that story, is there a way that we can just shortcut that path to get to the promised land? And I just remember cracking up and laughing probably for far too long at the question because I was like, of course you're not going to get there because I think what creates... So a lot of people who are getting into the game, right, is the note that I hear a lot is that they're struggling with confidence. They're struggling with confidence. They're struggling with their own insecurities around feeling like a fraud, et cetera, right? And the thing is that some of those feelings are good because if you're not that good, then it would be reasonable that you're not making a lot of money. It makes sense, right? And if you are exceptional at it, then why aren't the customers that you have telling more people about what you do, right? So some premise has to be false. You're either not as good as you think you are, right? Or you are exactly as good as you think you are, which is not that good. And that's okay, right? And I think that a lot of people, the problem is we have this compressed time horizon where we think that we see on Instagram, we should be a millionaire. I've been going out on my own for 6 months. Like, why have I not made millions and millions of dollars? It's like, because most people skip the rocky cutscene, but the rocky cutscene is the thing that builds the foundation that creates the peak of your entrepreneurial success. And so, it's my belief, it's like, why not wait 5 years and dig such a deep trench of experience and outwork yourself out through the high volume of repetition of doing skilled work and then be so much better than everyone else because you can look at a prospect in the eye and say, there's no one who you're talking to has more experience in this thing than I do. And so to answer the original question, I think, which is, kicking off, can someone shortcut it? I think that you absolutely can, but what you do is shortchange the height of the pyramid that you ultimately build, that'll be your entrepreneurial success. I think you build up, like a lot of people, you guys have probably seen this internet world, guys will, make $5,000 a month doing something. And then they're immediately selling a course on how to make $5,000 a month. And I think everybody here is tired of seeing that. And the thing is that guy or gal is selling to their peak. They're not going to make a ton of money because they don't have the depth of skills. Right. And so to develop in the entrepreneurial career, it's my opinion that there's three things that everyone needs. You need skills, you need traits, and you need beliefs. And so you need all three at each level. So it's like, if you think about success as a ladder, right? And on one side, you've got beliefs, one side, you've got traits, and then the rungs in the middle, you have skills, right? And the thing is you might be a level 6, have a level 6 skill set as an entrepreneur, or said differently, you might have a $10 million skill set with, let's say, $10 million character traits, but you might have $100,000 a year beliefs. And you will stop at 100,000 because that glass is required for you to climb up is not there. It is what will create those huge jumps that happen, because if you only have one of those three things that's missing, you can very rapidly jump up. And that's when you see some of these people that go nothing, 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 and they skyrocket. It's usually because they were building the wrong part of their ladder. They're not wrong, but just another part of the ladder that was not the weak link. And so what happens a lot of times is that people continue to add potential to themselves rather than actuality. And so they're adding more things on top of what might someday be realized, but that is not the constraint that they are suffering from in their business. And so I think one of the most important skills for any entrepreneur or people getting into business in general is being able to have the discernment to understand which of these things is the actual constraint on my business and then ruthlessly eliminating everything else and attacking it. Because fundamentally, if somebody goes faster on the journey of entrepreneurship, I use faster in quotes here, it's not because they have more time, right? It's because they appropriately solve the problems that are highest priority in the right sequence.
Alex, I love this framework already, especially since when somebody's going through Lifebook, there's actually one of the categories of Lifebook, which is actually working on your character. And we've had conversations with the people here about how to develop that. And, you know, I know that we define it and people have various ways of defining character. But since you've opened up, I don't know, Layla or Alex, who's best to answer this, but do you have a way of defining character based on this model that could get people an idea of how they can work on it?
I think Layla has better character than I do, but I'll give you my two cents. So I'd rather give an example, actually, it'd probably be more beneficial. So a lot of entrepreneurs that I'll talk to, well, let's say they know how to sell, right? And they believe, so that would be a skill, right? They have the skill of sales and promotion, and they know that, they believe that they can make money and they've conquered some of their money beliefs, et cetera. But the problem is they continue to jump from thing to thing to thing, right? And so the issue there is not that they lack a skill or a belief, but they lack the character trait of focus. And so that's just like a real world example of something super common that I see with, I would say, lower level, I use quotes, entrepreneurs who are not achieving, they're underachieving. It's because they're betting on six different things and saying one of these is going to work out, when in reality, any of them would work out if they just focused on that one thing exclusively. But none of them will work as long as they continue to try to pursue them all, because they have the fallacy of believing that it's the opportunity that is going to make them rather than they're focused on the opportunity that will make any of them work.
The shiny object syndrome is a big thing in the industry in general, but I think here you're talking about having that radical focus and working towards that idea. I love that character is one of the three traits. And when I think about beliefs, I mean, it's probably having a vision or, having aspirations and knowing you want to go the distance, which is actually going to be the next category we're going to be talking. Next one is quality of life. Last one is all about the life vision. So, which kind of isolates skills a lot when it comes to the career category here. It seems like skill is one of those that can be worked on, and it can be quite a progressive line that you can continue to master, continue to develop. And Layla, you were talking about how you went into developing your skills when it comes to human kinetics and educating yourself, but you were missing the sales piece, you were missing the marketing piece. So maybe I'd love to highlight again the importance, perhaps it's the sales and marketing, perhaps it's operation. What are some of the core skills you think we should be prioritizing for someone who wants to go the distance in their business?
I actually think that in order to attain any skill, you first have to have the skill of discernment, because then if you do not have discernment, then you don't know what skill to attain, right? And so I think self-awareness plus discernment, then you can say, you can look at somebody of success and say, what skills am I lacking that they have that I need to acquire in order to get there? And I think that one of the, like Alex and I, we talk to each other a lot and are reflective about what make each of us successful or not successful, et cetera. And I think that if you look at a lot of people and you look at their stack of skills, Alex has like a video on this called skill stacking, I think, sometimes it just doesn't make sense. And it's not because any of the skills are even lacking. It's because they lack the discernment to know which skill they need in order to become the person they want to become. And so I would say the first skill is that of discernment. And so I guess you could say it's a way of thinking, decision-making, et cetera, because you're deciding on what you're going to invest in itself. But being able to look at what you want and then say, what am I missing in order to get there? And that's something where you have to also be able to see all of your blind spots. And so I'd say that's the first piece of, if you want to gain skills, you fundamentally have to know how to choose what you need.
And from a, I'm gonna get in a little bit of dirt for this, because I'm sure that might be useful for some of the audience as well. So any business, right? You need to be able to generate leads. That is a skill. Now that is one kind of, it's a function of the business, and there's lots of sub skills underneath that. You need to learn how to write headlines. You need to learn how to write copy. You learn how to make creative. You need to learn how to edit videos. You need to learn how to buy media. You need to learn how to build landing pages. You need to how to build follow-up sequences, right? Which is then comes into the second category, which is lead nurture, which is how do you get someone to schedule and show up for some sort of appointment, right? Or some sort of sales event of some sort, right? So that's category two. Category three is sales of any kind, whether it's creating VSLs, whether it's phone sales, whether it's webinars, whether it's whatever type of thing, or maybe it's building a sales page with a buy button. It doesn't matter what industry, and there has to be some sort of conversion event where you take a prospect into a customer, right? You have to learn that skill, and it might be, and it depends on what industry you're in, right? The fourth is going to be fulfillment, which is what is the actual key thing that you're good at? A lot of people, it's kind of funny because when you look at like Shark Tank, a lot of those sharks have every one of these other things, and what they're looking for is a product that they can just drop into an entirely fully functioning thing. They know how to market, they know how to sell, they know how to acquire customers, they know how to build customer support teams, they know how to do all these things, but they just want the thing to sell, right? And so having the actual value to be provided, which is what I ultimately wrote the first book about, because originally I wrote a book called Money Models, which is the first book I wrote. And then I realized, well, they need to generate leads. So I wrote a second book called $100 Million Leads. Then I was like, well, crap, if they don't have an offer that actually is going to convert in the marketplace, we got to fix that first. So that's why the first book is on offers, even though it was the third book I wrote. And so number one, we got to be able to generate leads. Number two, you got to learn how to work leads. Number three, you got to learn how to sell. Number four, you got to learn how to fulfill and provide value. And number five, you need to learn how to retain those customers and get them to buy more things. Right. And so right now, if you're looking at your own skill set, you can see each of those kind of buckets of what has to happen in a business. And at each of those, they exist on a continuum. It is not a binary. So it's not, do I know how to generate leads? It's how well do I know how to generate leads? It's not, can I sell, but how well can I sell? Right. Because you may have a $100,000 per year entrepreneur skill set at each of these levels. Right. And you might have a $10 million entrepreneur skill set of sales. But until you have the other pieces in sequence before that, unless you have $10 million of skill in lead gen and $10 million skills in lead nurture, that $10 million skill of sales is not going to be realized, right? And so it's figuring out which of these things is the actual bottleneck, is the constraint of the business, because I see it as a pipeline, and then ruthlessly attacking that constraint, debottlenecking the constraint, and then moving on to the next thing. And then once all of the levels there are evened out from beginning to end, then you go back to the beginning and say, how do I go from $10 million of a lead generation skill to 30 million or 100 million. And then you learn more skills in more ways, to do that.
You just like made people drink from a fire hydrant there, Alex. And Tammy, thank you for taking the notes. We got the lead, nurture, sales, fulfillment, retention. People are like, this is fast, but that's why you all get a replay. You'll be able to set your own speed when we listen to the replay. This is super fantastic. And I think this is very like cookie cutter for anybody who wants to go out and set this up. Now, I remember, I think it was on the podcast, and I'll throw it at both of you because I know you do different functions. And one of those is knowing what it is you should be focusing on based on the size of the business, right? And I remember, I think it was on the podcast, you were saying like when you're at $10 million plus in building a venture, you start really working with the people. When you get started, the sales seems to be one of the key components. Could you give us a hierarchy or explain a bit of that concept? Because I think it'll be useful based on where people are at right now. What are the first things that they should be focused on as they want to grow a business?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and I'll shut up, Layla, take it from here. But what's kind of funny is that if we were to go in a mastermind and turn off all the lights and blindfold, everyone, all we got to do is just listen to the conversations and the questions that people are asking. You can tell how much people make based on the questions they're asking. And so, if you're $0 to $1 million, $0 to $3 million, you need to learn how to sell one product to one avatar on one channel. That's it. And a lot of people are like, well, won't I be reliant on one channel? It's like, yeah, but you also don't have a business. So let's start somewhere, right? And shouldn't I be selling them more things? It's like, yeah, but you can't even sell one thing yet. So why don't we start there, right? And shouldn't I be trying to, widen my market so I can sell to more people? It's like, no, because you can't even solve one person's problem well. So we should get good at that, right? And so it's 1-1-1. One product, one avatar, one channel, right? And as specific as you can be for each of those things, because the more narrow you are on the prospect, the more specific you can make your solution. And then the more catered your marketing can be on a specific channel that's going to be best suited for that avatar. And just about any business can go from 0 to 3 million, just learning how to do that one thing very effectively and ruthlessly eliminating everything else. Once you're at 1 to 3-ish million, to get to 10 million, you need to be able to usually spend more on acquisition. And the way to do that is reversed, which is by increasing the lifetime gross profit per customer. So the focus there is, how do I add more valuable services or more valuable products to each customer? And so that's where you create a customer journey and create an ascension process so you can have what people call the back end, right? Of some sort, whatever it is, right? Whether it's physical products, you have a really great follow-up system, you have affiliations that you refer more business to so you can get more money per customer, or you increase, you have a second product line or second service category that, ascends those customers to something else, right? That gets the lifetime gross profit per customer up so that you can then spend more in the acquisition and then in so doing, increase the amount of customers that are coming into your business, right? And so just as a quick framework for everybody that you can always write down and take home with you, there's only two ways to grow a business. Either get more customers or you make them worth more. That's it. So if you sell 10 customers a month and they're worth $10,000 each in terms of lifetime profit, it's never going to get higher than 100 grand a month. That's it. Doesn't matter how long you're in business, it will never surpass $100,000 a month. If you're only selling 10, that's your sales velocity. And then each one is worth 10 grand. That's it. Right? And so the only way to make more money is to increase the 10 to 20, right? Or more. or increase the lifetime gross profit per customer from 10 to 20 or more. Right? That's it. And so if you have these simple frameworks, you can look at your business and think, which of these things is the lowest hanging fruit for me right now? Is it easier for me to double my ad spend, or is it easier for me to figure out how to decrease my churn, you know, cut my churn in half? It depends on what your business is, right? And so once you're at 10 million at that point, because now you've increased how much you make per customer, and many times if you just increase it, you can actually just go from 3 to 10 million without changing anything about your acquisition, simply by having more value to provide, right? But once you're at 10-ish, sometimes 15-ish, you know, these are rough numbers, right? Once you're there, then you need to focus on professionalizing the business. So that's when consistency of outcome and quality assurance becomes really important, because the thing that got you there is you're really running like a big, small business, right? So you have the numbers of maybe a bigger business, but you're still operating like a really small mom and pop. And so that's when you have to bring on outside managers who have a little bit more experience, that can professionalize things, can make things more consistent, they can make sure the accounting is in place, et cetera. And you usually just the consistency of outcome, word of mouth continues, and you'll grow up to 30-ish million. Sometimes it's 40, 30, 40. At that point, the thing that you need to fix the business is professionalization. But what ends up happening is it's a double-edged sword where you start losing your innovative edge. You start losing the entrepreneurship. You start losing the innovation of the things that got you there, right? And so then at that point, you need to bring in new blood and new intrapreneurs to lead divisions of companies. Because then when at that point, what happens is that you become a company of companies, right? And so you actually have people who head up their own P&Ls, profit statement, right, as basically their own little mini CEOs within the conglomeration. So when you hear about a company like Amazon, Amazon's not a company. It's a conglomeration of lots of companies that are within it, right? They've got web services, they've got logistics, they've got a platform for e-commerce, they've got a seller market. I mean, they've a zillion different things that make up what is Amazon. Each of those have CEOs that run those companies, and you know, have subdivision heads that who run, you know, geographic areas, et cetera. And so that's where organizational, you know, structure starts to become more and more important, and the incentives that are there, because it needs someone else's juju to grow it. It can't be the founder anymore. And so that grows you to 100 plus. But just for everyone, hopefully I know that's probably drinking from a fire hose, but that's just a little bit of a background. And I said I was going to shut up quickly, which I clearly failed at.
Well, everybody's hydrated, Alex. So this is great. This is why we came here. And again, everybody can watch a replay and churn again. Churn is at losing customers for that term for people who are looking. And I think I have one specific for Lalo. So right now we've just covered a ton of stuff when it comes to growing your business, scaling your business, understanding the skills that you need to do, the journey that you take your customers on. But I wanted to maybe go into a separate topic still related to career. And of course, for those of you who are here, definitely type in any questions you might have in the chat so we can actually have them answered live. We'll even be able to have you ask it live as well. I have a feeling this might be a Lalo question, but of course I could be wrong, but it sounded like you went into, you know, personal fitness, then you learned the sales and marketing skills. Now you're talking about being the one more in charge of the operations. It sounds like you kind of reinvented your own career as the business grew. And I wanted to talk about, how was that transition? Like, how easy was it for you to go like, okay, the sales I'm going to put aside, now I'm going to be on operations. Did you have to reschool yourself? Did you just pick it up as you go? And what would be advice you would give for people that need to make a kind of shift in skill sets?
Yeah. You know, honestly, I think that when it happened, basically, Alex and I got invited to a meetup with people doing 8-9 figures. And we had just started doing, you know, 7 figures a year. And we were like, I don't know why we're here. And basically, when we were there, you know, they suggested that we need to really make sure that we split roles. And one of the people kind of said, Layla, you know, I think you should go over all the operational stuff. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I just cannot be the reason this business fails. You know, like the last thing I want is people like, oh yeah, it's his wife that runs the business, but we all know who the brains are, right? Like that's like my ultimate fear. That's what I would have never wanted for myself. And so I looked at it a lot like I did with my weight loss journey, which if anyone's gone and, you know, had personal fitness transformation, it's a lot of identity shifting. And I think that I've luckily always had the belief that I don't identify with anything, because I feel like that limits me in one way, shape, or form. I have values that I like to be guided by, but I don't have an identity that I'm married to. And so I kind of went from I was completely in the direction of sales to thinking I am now completely going to become an integrator. And so I read all the books that I possibly could on being an integrator, on being I call it two, because I'm not the idea person. I can figure out how I put the people in place and the systems to make it happen person. And I just went all in on understanding that. And I think studying it and watching YouTube videos and listening to podcasts, and it was all I did every day, all day. And I don't even think that we had friends because I just didn't want to fail. And I wanted to prove to myself that I could be that person, because in my mind, I had everything against me, which I think a lot of people do, right? I'm 23. I have zero experience. You know, I'm in an industry fall, and I felt like everything was against me. I'm like, I'm this like little inexperienced woman who has nothing. I don't know anything. And so I think that what drove me to work really hard. And I knew that the only thing I can control was the output, right? And so because I didn't have the belief that I have a limitation as a person, and because the only belief that I had was that I have the ability to outwork everybody else, because I think that the results of work don't care who they're coming from, right? It doesn't matter who's putting the work in. You get the result if you put the work in. And so that equals out the playing field. So that was what I focused on in my shift. And, you know, I think it's really just look forward and not back. You know, I think that we can become a different person at any moment. It's just that we have all of these things that we look past. We're looking behind our shoulder at all points in time. And I think instead, I can remember so viciously in the first 3 years of business, I don't think I looked back once. I don't think I thought about my old life once. I didn't think about what I was doing before once. I was like, I'm so focused on what's happening right now. And so I think that if you're trying to make this shift, because the business requires you to shift at all points of time. It required another huge shift of us, you know, I think in the last 18 months, which was, you know, for me specifically, being the person who is the operator, who is running everything, who's sending all the emails, who's running all the meetings, who's on 11 meetings a day, every day, to, okay, if we want to grow this business, I actually have to delegate more. I have to get an operator, and then I have to train an operator. And for me, that was extremely difficult because I'd been doing, going very fast all the time, to then I have to do less. And so it never stops. The business always, if you want to grow a business, you have to be able to constantly flux and change at different points in time, right? And so I think that, for one, not limiting yourself by labeling yourself with any sort of identity, you know, even like, I mean, I get really hesitant with anything like a personality test with my team, because then they're like, oh, I'm an ITJ, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, go see people on the weekends because I, you know, drinky. And I'm like, I think that's really not true at all. And I think a test told you something. Sometimes people like to be alone. You know, and think if you can detach from all limiting beliefs about ourselves, and then we can just focus on the fact that anyone they're willing to work in can have anything they want in life, because if there's one person who's proven that it can happen, then any of us can have it. And so I think that was my mentality throughout it. And I will say that it wasn't easy mentally. I think that it built more character in me than anything else in my life ever had, because it was really, 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 really hard. And I think that what I always remind myself of, you cannot have courage without the presence of fear. So if you want to be courageous and you want to be a hero, then you have to have fear. It's part of the equation. And so anyone that's building a business and looking to make that kind of transition, I think you just have to remind yourself that, like, you don't get the awesome story without, you know, kind of fighting the monsters in the dark.
Yeah, that is incredible. And honestly, it's amazing to see you both reiterate this idea of like working hard, figuring it out, starting with the strong character and just putting in the hours, putting in the work, figuring things out. Because, you know, we do live in an age where pretty much any answer to any question we have can be found, and we can reinvent ourselves so more rapidly than ever. I want to highlight just the fact that we had a quick question around from Cammy Wood, talking about what came first for you, the passion or the career. Alex, you already answered it in the chat, but maybe you could bring it. That answer in a video for those who might not be able to see the chat in a replay.
Yeah, I think that the whole idea of, you know, trying to find what you're passionate about, I don't know. I think that you're not really passionate about stuff you're not good at, right? And so, like, I want to, you know, be in business about something I'm passionate about. Well, you're not, like, most people don't enjoy stuff they're not good at. Might need to, like, wouldn't it be great if you were passionate about something that made you money? Well, if you're really good at something, you'll usually like it more. And so I think a lot of times people conflate the sequence of the things. I think you have to start pulling the thread and just continue to do, like we say, you know, do the boring work, because excellence is built through repetition. You know, it's built through volume. It's built through, in the fitness world, I like using the term time under the bar. Like, you have to put your time under the bar. I like Layla says about this a lot, which is that hard work doesn't care who's doing it, right? And so, like, many of us, at least I, you know, had the thought that I didn't deserve X, Y, and Z, right? I was like, I don't think I'm a good enough person. You know, I think other people are, you know, better, nicer, sweeter, better character people than me. But the cool thing is that you can be an absolutely terrible person, and if you still do the things that create success will happen, because success does not care, which for me was very freeing.
I want to bring up Brooke McGowan, who did ask a powerful question as well, that I wanted to let her give a chance to ask that question. So Brooke, go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah, so I just wanted to know a little bit more about the avatar and being specific with it without kind of excluding other people, but also kind of targeting.
Pick the hours to figure out the person that you can provide the most. If you have, let's say, you know, you said family man, but what type of family man do you, whatever it is, the intervention that you do it? Be an older guy? Would it be a younger guy? Would it be a wealthier guy? Would it be a poor guy? Would it be just a person who have kids? They married, not married? The industry? Are they a finance guy? Are they a corporate person? Are they an entrepreneur? Like, the best thing to do is picture and give the person a name and say, this is John, my avatar. John's 38 years old. You know, he's divorced. He's finance. He wants to, you know, whatever. Right. And the thing is the more specific you be about the avatar, right, the more specific you can be about the solution. And ultimately, the more ability to productize your service. So you can, because ultimately, all of us want to be able to create a consistent outcome for a specific person, right? So we want to have a little factory that when we input this person, this output of transformation occurs, whatever that experience we need them to have, right? And so it's hard to build a factory when the inputs are different, mm-hmm. right? Because you want to have a little template that everyone fits into. And then when they fit into that machine, you can be really efficient with that machine. But it's like, if it's a really round one and a really square one and a really old one, all of a sudden it's really difficult to build that machine. And then you do all this custom work and then it's not right. And then ultimately you're stuck dealing with all these custom requests. And it's always, you know, because out of that, you can't say no to business. But strategy is who you do not serve. It's much more important to know who you don't serve. When you cover all your no's, the yes is kind of what remains.
Okay, so then with the avatar, so we kind of target the outcome that avatar wants rather than saying, are you this, this, and this? That's not how we kind of like find them. It's more about saying this is the outcome that we offer because we know that that's the outcome that they want.
It's both. You're going to be talking to a very, like, the messaging is going to, so the point of great, like, educational writing is for people to understand. The point of great persuasion is for the prospect. So when we're writing something, we want the person to read it and think, this person understands my struggles. And if you very accurately depict what someone's pain is, they will almost always believe that your solution will work for them based on how accurately you depicted their pain. And you can only be accurate in your depiction of pain if you know exactly who you're speaking with. If you're speaking to an audience that's 1,000 people that are all very different, it's very difficult to depict your pain. You have to be much more generic. And it's not to say that you can't do that in the future, but for most people, it's much easier to carve out a very small part of the ocean and turn it into a puddle and know every aspect of that puddle, right? And how you're going to serve that tiny little puddle. Right. And then over time, it becomes a pop, right? You realize after dealing with 100 types of customers, you know what? There's actually this other person, and it'll always come on the outskirts, right? But you'll have a very specific template, and you'll have, you know, 75% of that template, and that's okay, right? You'll deal with some of these people, and then all of a sudden, you will find one. You're like, you know what? I thought this was my avatar, but this is the guy. These are the ones that crush it with my intervention of whatever it is that I sell, right? And so I'll go back to the very first that you asked. The avatar that you should serve is the person that you can provide the most value to. So I have, you know, a lot of times, because, you know, we're in the direct response marketing world in general, a lot of agencies and stuff tend to list my, you know, YouTube channel and whatnot. And it might be tied, they might say like, oh, I serve chiropractors and I also serve dentists or whatever, right? And if I ask them, which of those two do you make the most money? Usually it's an answer, which is like, you know what, these are the ones I do much better with. It's like, right, stop servicing the people that provide value. Just zero in. Who can I provide the most value to? That is where everything starts. Once you have the most value, then you're pricing the best, right? You can have the most margin because you provide the most value. You can price premium. You can hire more people because you're selling at a bigger profit margin. And then you can continue to have a virtuous cycle where only the people that you can provide to, you make the most profit for it. You can hire the best talent to continue to provide the value, get word of mouth, and then around and around the flywheel spins. the reverse of that would be sell every single person who asks, right? Create custom solutions for every person that are not scale. Have almost no margin because you're spending all this time making custom work for every single person that you sign up, not have any margin left over, completely overworked, not have any time, right? And then consistently wonder what's with my business when it was really just decisions that were not made. Does that help in terms of picking the outcome?
No, that's amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries.
Awesome, Brooke. I think that was a powerful question. Thank you for the answer, Alex. I want to see if Julianne, are you able to ask that question live? I know you were talking about some of the identity shift techniques. So, Julianne, yeah. Go ahead and unmute yourself.
Can you hear me? I'm here. Hi, guys. What a fantastic, so far, just awesome. Love listening to you. Can't wait to read your books and start watching your videos. I, too, am on a weight loss or weight release journey. And I was wondering, and also an entrepreneurial one. So I've kind of two questions. So Layla, I was wondering if you had any particular techniques in particular for the mind shift, for the identity shift, which is needed in both cases. I think it's possibly needed. And I think I could use some help with it.
Yeah. I think there's two steps. I think the first one specifically with like any kind of fitness journey is you have to ask yourself, and this is something that comes from one of our close friends, his name's Trevor Cashy, which his stuff's really good. So I was watch some of his stuff, but it's finding out why you eat in the first place. So it's like, why do I eat? Because as humans, most of us don't just eat to fuel our bodies, because if we did, we'd be eating chicken and broccoli all day with nothing on it and we'd be fine with it. And so I think the first thing is becoming aware of the patterns that you have currently, because then if you become aware of them, you can catch yourself when you're doing them. So I think that was the first thing, which they're not a part of your identity. They're just habits that you've developed, which because we're humans and that's how we function, it's a good thing. Let's just use it in the opposite direction, right? It's like we've trained ourselves to eat because of certain things. Now we're going to untrain ourselves by saying we don't eat when these things happen, right? So for me, it might have been stress or social situations, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's becoming aware of all those situations first. The second piece to that, I think, is just having a lot of reminders of what you want. So for myself, you know, during that time specifically, and something that I've always done is just putting reminders everywhere possible on my refrigerator, on my phone, on making vision boards, just of what I want. Because as we've grown multiple companies, I tend to think more and more that humans are actually altered by positive reinforcement rather than negative. So if I think about what I don't want all day, then I'm probably more likely going to get what I don't want, which is like, yeah, I don't want to be fat, no shit, you know,
attraction.
Right. Yeah. I think it's much easier to have it's much more encouraging if you positively reinforce yourself, right? Rather than if I just talk crap to myself all day. And so I think that if we put reminders around, so like I always would write things on the mirror. I had a vision board broken down with my goals from monthly to weekly to daily in terms of how I was going to change my body. And it was just taking it day by day, I think, at that point, and having those daily reminders. And, you know, I think that the last thing I'll say is that in terms of like shifting your identity, I think it's, again, remembering like all humans are, we can all change doing the same methods that anyone else would, right? And so I think that especially in an entrepreneurial and a weight loss journey, there's going to be so many things that pop up in your head of reasons why it won't work. There's always reasons. And, you know, like, it's like, I almost wish that I could become, when I was in weight loss, I wish I could have inhabited all these different identities so I could come back and be like, listen, they're all just excuses, right? We all have our crutch, our go-to of why we shouldn't have this happen for us. And so I think that it's being able to also look at those and remind yourself when those pop up, oh, it's that. It's my brain trying to protect me from change. It's not that it's true. These thoughts are not predictions, right? But my brain's trying to protect me from change. So it's telling me that these are the reasons why I can't change. Not true. Nice try, brain, but I'll see you later. I'm going to go do something else.
Awesome.
I think it's just reminding yourself of that stuff. And it's a slow process over time. I think that the one thing I tell my team a lot is I say, if you're trying to change something about yourself, the biggest thing you can tell yourself is like, let me just prove myself wrong today. Because I think a lot of times we're our own worst enemy and we're trying to prove ourselves of why we can't do something. But instead I say, you know, screw it. Prove myself wrong. I want to prove myself wrong today of why my thoughts are not true.
Beautiful, beautiful. And do you have any advice for entrepreneurs? I'm a designer. I'm designing an incredible line of handbags. that are customizable, and it's a game changer in the market. So I'm in the process of designing them right now, and I'm going to need capital, of course. And do you have anything in today's environment that you think is a really, there's so many different ways to get capital. Do you have any sort of go-tos for people like me, you know, just starting from the very beginning? And I'm not the business person, I'm the designer, you know, so I'll need someone to help me with that.
I don't have experience in raising capital. However, I know if I went about that experience, if I'm the one who bakes the pies, then I would say I probably need to find someone who knows how to get the money to buy the materials for the pies. And so I think that it's very important that you focus on if you are not going to try and be profitable from the get-go, right? Because that's also an option, which is, could I figure out a way in which this works, in which I don't need capital? Because there are lots of people done it before, right? The other option would be, I would say, okay, well, if I'm not going to make it profitable and I'm not going to rethink that, then I'm going to say that I have to be very careful in selecting some kind of financial partner in this, and how I structure that is also very important. I've just seen that bite a lot of people in the booty. But so I can't speak of personal experience, because I think we've always kind of done things where we want to be profitable from the ground up. But when you have material costs, things like that, I understand it's a thing. So I think you're in such an early stage that you would have to have it a lot more proven out to raise significant equity. I mean, I know there's a lot of different little businesses and stuff nowadays, but I think finding some kind of partner to help with that is probably the best route.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you, Layla. Thank you. Can't help myself. What we have to be most careful of are the our is statements, right? Our I am a, right? And whatever you put after that, or I am not, are extremely powerful beliefs, right? And so you said, I am a designer. I am not a business person. I would ask you the question, do you think that belief serves?
Well, I actually don't think that's true, to tell you the truth. I meant more of, I totally take your point. And I think I've been a business person. What I meant really was that in this case with it, I do want it to be my business, but I need the expert in business, the expert in making things run, marketing. And well, marketing, I feel good about, but I don't have the experience in it. But I need.
No one ever does. Who starts?
Yeah, but I have tons of great ideas, so I'm not worried about that. But I really need the person who's the financial expert and the how to work with manufacturing and things of that nature. So I feel really confident about being able to, you know, work in tangent with someone else who has a lot more experience in that area. So I do appreciate what you're saying, and I must really work on, I get a little nervous sometimes, and sometimes you don't say exactly what you mean, but I thank you for pointing that out too.
No, you're good. And I mean, if you imagine 10 years from now, right, that you are extremely successful as a retailer and designer, do you think that in that reality that you see 10 years from now, that you would be an expert at dealing with manufacturers and knowing how to price products? And if that's the case, then you might as well start wearing that identity now.
Okay. Cool.
I'm just sharing. I mean, you can.
Oh, I think that's true. And in my dreams, I see myself that way. So I know I'm capable of all of that. I just think also that I have to recognize where my greatest strengths are and where my weaknesses are, so I can pull in the partner I need. So I sort of undersold myself a little bit there. So anyway, I do appreciate it. And I can't wait to read all your stuff. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Julianne. Alex, Layla, thank you for the answer. I'm going to take advantage of, you know, being the host and throw in a question that I think could really bring up the unique dynamic. And one of the particular reasons I did want to bring you both together on this call is because you have your dynamic of working together on the career. And I just wanted to understand maybe some words of wisdom, some tips for those who do want to find a life partner, love partner, and build a business together. Some tips that can support, whether it's how to work better when a business, how do you separate personal life, any advice that you would have as you've built something incredible together, which is very admired. I'm sure there's been some roadblocks, some things that happened, but any words of wisdom we could share?
I'll keep it short and twice and let you elaborate, Alex, but I think it's in the pick. So, you know, something that I don't know how to help people do later on is when they're having issues trying to make it work with their spouse, I think it's like, what is your intention with your relationship that you, when you start it from the beginning? And our intention was never just marriage, just love and romance. It was always the full shebang, the whole package. And if anything, I think it was kind of business first because we were both really ambitious people and we're both like heads down, want to build, because we don't look at this as work. It's not like a job. This is like what we do with our life, right? And so I think finding somebody who was like-minded in that and then being really intentional about what the purpose of the relationship is and how we add value in each other's lives. And I think it sounds a little weird when you say that on paper because everyone's like love and chemistry and this and that, but that was not the case. And that's not how we picked each other. We're very logical about it. And so the first thing I always tell people is just like with context, I think that we were very rational in how we chose to be life partners. Whereas I think a lot of people pick someone that, you know, they're in love with and they have chemistry and romance, but then they try later to make it the life partner thing, but they kind of already had a mismatch because they chose with a different intention in mind.
Yeah, I think you nailed all the ones that I was probably going to say. It's like you got spent a lot more time picking their business partners than they do with their spouses. Spouse is probably the most important decision you'll make in your entire life. It has a 0.71 correlation to your subjective well-being based on the strength of your relationship with your significant other. And some interesting stats on this, that if you make a single dollar with somebody together in a business, the likelihood you get divorced is 10%. It's precipitously less than if you don't make a dollar together. And so I think that there's just a lot of other things that have to happen in order for you to go into business with your spouse. And a lot of people should not be in business with their spouse. A lot of people shouldn't be married to the people they're married to. But I'm just being real. Like, it is what it is. And so Layla and I very, very deliberately picked one another based on, you know, agreed upon outcomes. We were like, this is where we want to go. This is how we want to get there. Is this that you want to live as well? If you do, then let's ride this ride together. Very much how we approached it. And we were not in love on the day we got married. So very contrarian. We believed that we could build that love through actions. And so we never had that chemical romance of like, oh my God, I can't sleep. And we're, you know, lovey and can't breathe. Like, we didn't have any of that. It was very much like, this is where we want to go. And I think that you're the best, you're the highest likelihood that who's going to help me get there. And as long as we're both getting what we both want of the relationship, and it's a mutually beneficial relationship. And so we're very big fair exchange or abundant exchange in a relationship, which is both people need to get more than they're putting in. Like, both people need to get excess of what they input to the relationship. And I think a lot of people don't have that. And that's a lot of times because, like Layla said, they pick wrong and they pick with the wrong lens. And so you pick with one lens and then for some reason you're upset that the lens that you saw originally and that you made your selection through no longer applies to the life that you want to live now. And you can try and, you know, square peg and round hole, but that's not what you selected that person for. It's like selecting a sales guy to do finance and then wondering why it's not working out. You pick wrong.
That sounds like a horrible idea to do that. Damn. But I very much love this real perspective. And honestly, this whole conversation has been filled with nuggets of wisdom. So Layla, Alex, thank you so much for your time. I know we're coming up on the hour. And what I'd love to do before the end of the call is maybe just give at least an opportunity to share one more words of wisdom. As you know, the people that are tuning in here, they've all taken very deep thought into drafting out what are the visions, beliefs, the purposes, as well as strategies for what they want in every category of their life. Right now, we had a call. This was about our career category. So if you had, whether it's a belief that should be taken on, a vision that you think is powerful, a reason why that vision should be powerful, or any strategies that could support people in their career, if there's just some closing words you could share, that would be a great way to tail it off. And Layla, I'll throw it up to you to kick it off.
If you're designing your life and you're designing your vision, then I think that the one thing that you have to keep in mind is just something that, you know, I think self-doubt and fear are what, you know, like designing it out and looking at it, and we get really excited. But then when it comes down to executing it on a day-to-day and on a week-to-week, I think that the things that stop us are just like the monsters in our head, right? It's all the fear and the self-doubt. And so I think the one thing I'll say is that along the journey, the one thing I learned was you can outwork your self-doubt and your fear. You know, I think if you put in the work and you put in the hours and you take the actions despite feeling, you know, crippling anxiety, you still get the outcome. You know, like, you don't get it any less than somebody who has maybe lower. And so I think it's more meaningful. right? And so I think that rather than thinking that it's going to be easy, a lot of the times I like to tell myself, it's going to suck. It's going to be really hard. I'm going to be anxious. I'm going to be stressed. I'm scared. And I like to prepare myself in that manner when I'm tackling a new life vision challenge, because I think that if you set out and you have this unrealistic view of it's going to be easy and awesome and exciting, then I think the times when it's not are going to feel a lot worse. And so instead, I always set out with something when I'm trying something new. I'm like, I'm going to feel like crap. I'm going to be exhausted. I'm going to be stressed. It's going to like freak me out of my mind. And I tell myself that instead. And then the days that it doesn't, I'm like, this is nice. You know, like we won. Today was a good day. And then every day that it does happen like that, which is 50% of the time, then this was going to, but life is full of challenge, and life without challenge is not meaningful. So here we are.
Thank you, Layla. That was awesome advice to close it off. I've already, for everybody here, I put the Instagram for Layla and for Alex here. You can see it in the chat. So go and follow them. Send them a direct message, even thanking them for a part of this session. Alex, did you have any closing words of your own?
I think you can always frame the deficits and problems that you have in terms of a question. So a lot of people are like, I don't know how to sell. And so instead of saying, I don't know how to sell, say, how to learn how to sell. It's just a solution-oriented mindset. And I think a lot of people just don't have it. They look at a wall and say, I guess there's no way around it, rather than like, in what ways, how many different ways can I get around this wall? Can I get through it? Can I get over it? Can I get around it? Can I get under it? And so most entrepreneurs fail not because they actually fail, but because they give up. Like, that's really the reason. Because there's so many entrepreneur stories I shared a couple in the book, but you know, there's... You read Shoe Dog, and you read the biggest companies that exist, and they have existential crises almost every 6 months. They're like, there's no way we're going to make it. And I think it's a question of will, because a lot of times, like, no one else is going to will your dream into existence. And so it has to be something that you truly believe. And to just borrow one of the beliefs from Stuart Schwartzman, who's the founder of Blackstone, he said, really, really big goals and small goals are equally hard to achieve. So you might as well make them big. And you do it that way because it continues to give you the will to get through the times when it's hard, and it'll be just as hard. And I think that humans perceive difficulty the same way. 10 out of 10, hardness feels the same to everyone. And independent of whatever thing you are against, it'll still feel 10 out of hard. The question is whether you can have 10 out of 10 will to get through it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this was Layla and Alex Hormozi dishing out one of my favorite sessions so far. This has been so incredible. Once again, I put a link to the book, $100 Million Offers, How to Make Offers So Good People Feel Stupid Saying No, is a great headline for the book and amazing content inside as well. Again, I put the Instagram for Alex as well as for Layla. You'll see that you can get advice when it comes to operations, getting some relationship advice, getting some business, sales, marketing, all of it. And I love one of the best things from the way that they brand themselves is they have a YouTube channel. They share all this wisdom with a tagline, I have nothing to sell you, which means that they're sharing all this knowledge. And I'll make an assumption here, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're on a big mission right now to help everybody get past that $3 million mark. They want to be able to be the best resource of information for entrepreneurs to get to that $3 million mark, because guess what? Once they get to 3 million, well, maybe they'll be a part of the investment board on that company. They'll be able to make some acquisition. I know acquisition.com is a big investment initiative that they're doing, just like how Alex, I think you were saying earlier, how when you have the systems to generate sales, generate leads, have success, build the processes, then you try to identify the products like Shark Tank. You guys are building your own little Shark Tank to make some people hyper successful, and you get them to that $3 million mark. So absolutely recommend everybody to go and consume everything that is out there from these people. I think it'll be the foundation for building a business, building a career, and achieving incredible things. We are on the hour. Alex, Layla, thank you so much for your time. All you listeners, this was a fantastic session, and thank you for being so generous, and congratulations on your ongoing success. Thank you for listening to the Jason Mark Campbell Business Podcast. And of course, keep selling with love.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.